chapter 1. I'd like us to read again verses 20 down to 31. So we're up to days 5 and 6 of the creation week. And then it says, "Then God said, let the waters abound with an abundance of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth, across the face of the firmaments of the heavens. So God created great sea creatures, and every living thing that moves, with which the waters abounded according to their kind, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good, and God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters in the seas, and let birds multiply on the earth. So the evening and the morning were the fifth day. Then God said, let the earth bring forth living creature, the living creature according to its kind, cattle and creeping thing and beast of the earth, each according to its kind. And it was so. And God made the beast of the earth according to its kind, cattle according to its kind, and everything that creeps on the earth according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let us make man in our image, according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle, over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God he created him. Male and female he created them. Then God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. And God said, see, I have given you every herb that yields seed, which is on the face of the earth, and every tree whose fruit yields seed. To you it shall be for food. Also to every beast of the earth, to every bird of the air, and to everything that creeps on the earth, in which there is life, I have given every green herb for food. And it was so. Then God saw everything that he made, and indeed it was very good. So the evening and the morning were the sixth day." Okay, so you'll recall that last week we began to look at days 5 and 6 of the creation week, the creation of living things. God did something different on day 5 to anything that he'd created on the first 4 days. He created living things, things that had life in them. So, living creatures, creatures that fly, creatures that swim through the waters, through the sea and through the rivers, and creatures that live on the land. And that, of course, includes man, who God created last of all. And we're talking about everything in which there is life. God created on days 5 and 6. And God saw, it says, that means he looked upon, like, see it and it took him by surprise. It means, having created it, he looked upon everything that he created, and God declared it all to be very good. Behold, God said, it is very good. Which I think, I don't know about you, but I think is something of an understatement to say, behold, it is very good. It's not just very good, it's absolutely amazing. I don't know about you, but I think of myself, I don't spend enough time looking up at the sky and looking across the fields and looking at the animals and looking at listening to the birds, and I don't think I spend enough time doing that. I think we all need to do more, because in seeing it, don't get me wrong, I'm not one of these who says, you know, walking in the fields is my church. I'm not into that, but there is something about the creation that reflects the glory of God, isn't there? And it's absolutely amazing, all of it is. You know, even saying the other week, you know, you might say, well, I don't much care for insects. But actually, whether we like them or not, and I wouldn't really want one of those great big things that crawl around in Indonesia walking all over me. I wouldn't want them being a bath full of cockroaches, don't get me wrong. But actually, there is something amazing about them. You know, and the fact is, as I was saying, you know, praying just then, you know, we can create all kinds of things, and there's a kind of genius in mankind. There is, let's be honest. But we could not make one bug, could we? Live. We couldn't do that. And the thing is, every single bug Every single creature has a purpose. They all do something. Whether we understand what it is or whether we like what it is particularly, the fact is they all have a purpose. And in the words of that song back in the 70s, everything is beautiful in its own way. It really is. So the creation is absolutely staggeringly amazing. But it is actually more amazing than any of us actually realise, I guess. Well, most of us anyway. Every microscopic cell in your body and in the body of every animal, every creature, everything, there are trillions of cells, so small that you can't see them except with a powerful microscope. And what is going on in there is nothing short of the busyness of a city in every single cell. You know, David said in the Psalms, "I am fearfully and wonderfully made." And he was right. And he didn't even know, I guess, what went on in your cell, in the cells of your body. And how anybody who sees this can say, no God, can say evolution, can say we are all accidents, is just beyond me. In fact, I will go as far to say this. If Charles Darwin had known what we know today, the information that is widely available to everybody today, anyone who's interested, I doubt that he would have put forward, I doubt he would have wrote his book, because he would have been laughed off the face of the planet. But the fact is, and the amazing thing is this, today, the scientific world do know. They do know what goes on in a cell. They do know about DNA. They do know about all those things. And yet they continue to perpetuate the lie. That's what's more staggering. You could almost say of Darwin, well, if he'd have known that, he wouldn't have said that for sure. And he didn't know. But today they do. Today they do know, especially what has been discovered even just over the last couple of decades. What they know, if they were honest, they should not be continuing with the whole thing of evolution anymore, but they perpetuate the lie. What do I mean by lie? Well, actually, it's my belief that this is actually one of the principal things that the Apostle Paul was talking about in Romans 1, when he said, "For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who suppress the truth in unrighteousness, because what may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has shown it to them. For since the creation of the world, his invisible attributes are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even his eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Because although they knew God, they did not glorify him as God, nor were thankful, but became futile in their thoughts, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Professing to be wise, they became fools, and changed the glory of the incorruptible God into an image made like corruptible man, and birds, and four-footed animals, and creeping things. Therefore God also gave them up to uncleanness, in the lust of their hearts, to dishonour their bodies among themselves, who exchanged the truth of God for the lie, and worshipped and served the creature rather than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen." And I want to pick up on that expression, "who exchanged the truth of God for the lie." You see, that is a matter of choice. It's not that Charles Darwin and co, you know, were sort of, you know, misled, and that, you know, the way things looked, it certainly looked to them like it was so obviously evolution. You know, it wasn't that they were kind of hoodwinked into thinking that. It was actually a choice. They chose to believe that, even though it wouldn't have exactly been obvious. Who would have thought that we came from monkeys? I mean, who would have thought that? Who would have thought that we all started as an amoeba in the primeval swamp? I mean, who would have thought that? So it wasn't exactly obvious. You don't sound like I'm being facetious, I'm being sarcastic. But it wasn't, so it was something they had to deliberately conjure up. was a choice that they actually made to exchange the truth of God that certainly here in this country and in the Christianized world, the truth as it is revealed in here was generally believed. You know, even by people who didn't profess particularly to be born again Christians or anything, nevertheless, you know, the vast majority believed, well, God created all, whoever God happens to be. You know, that was the generally accepted view. No, virtually nobody was thinking, yeah, we all came from frogs, you know, or whatever. You know, so they deliberately chose to put that view forward. And initially it was rejected, but very soon it gained ground. They exchanged the truth for the lie. And society generally today has chosen to continue going along with it. Yep. That's the thing. But you see, you've got to ask yourself, well, why would anyone do that? Why would anyone choose to believe a lie rather than the truth? And especially when the lie in question has zero evidence to back it up. And I mean zero. I don't mean it's got a bit of it. It's not even got a bit. There is zero evidence to back it up, and yet they go along with it. And nowadays, because of what has been discovered over the last few decades, nowadays it even involves denying what is evidentially true in order to believe what is evidentially untrue. So why would otherwise intelligent people do that? The answer is, it serves their interests as sinners to do so. That's why. It serves their interests. See, as we've said so many times before, if there's no God, there's no judgment. And if there's no judgment and there's no heaven and there's no hell, well, you might as well get on and do whatever you like. Because nobody's keeping count. Is there? Nobody's keeping a record of anything. You might as well go out and do whatever you want. Get as much in of what you want before you die. You know, put together your bucket list. Because who knows how long you're going to be here. You might as well get as much in as possible. Because when you're dead, you're dead. And that's it. And if you want to sin, it serves your interests to believe science has proved there's no God. That's all. But there isn't any proof of evolution. Anyway, this evening I want us to think again about this expression that comes up several times in this passage that we've just read. According to their kind. So it's there in verse 21. So God created great sea creatures and every living thing that moves, with which the waters abounded, according to their kind. It's there in verse 24. God said, let the earth bring forth the living creature according to its kind. Cattle and creeping thing and beast of the earth, each according to its kind, and it was so. And God made the beast of the earth according to its kind, cattle according to its kind, and everything that creeps on the earth according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. According to their kind. Every living creature, it says, according to its kind. Each reproducing according to its kind. And the Hebrew word there is min. Kind is the Hebrew word is min. So what that means is that each according to its kind, and they reproduce according to their kind, is cats produce cats, and dogs produce dogs, and horses produce horses, and rabbits rabbits, and mice, and jellyfish, and you know, whatever else you want to say, each reproduces according to its kind, doesn't it? Now, there may be variety within each given kind. So you've got big cats and small cats and cuddly cats and ferocious cats, but they're all cats. And there may be various different kinds of dogs. In fact, there are. So there's big dogs, like your Burmese mountain dog or your Irish wolfhound. And there are little dogs, like little teacup chihuahuas and things like that, and everything in between. And you've got dingoes, you know, and ferocious wolves and things like that. But they're all dogs. And so Cats produce cats, and dogs produce dogs, and horses produce horses, and we all know this, it's obvious. One kind does not become a different kind, does it? And okay, so the person who believes that might say, come on Ian, but that's, the reason for that is obvious, because it takes millions of years for the, you know, the amphibian to become a bird or whatever, a mammal, or and then a man. It takes millions and millions of years, so of course you can't observe it. All right. So you'd expect to find it in the fossil record, wouldn't you? You'd expect to find all the intermediary, you know, creatures between, you know, monkeys and men or whatever else, but they're not there. There aren't any. There aren't any. You see, it doesn't happen. In fact, it cannot happen. It cannot happen. But of course, the entire theory of evolution is based on the idea that it does happen. That is exactly what has happened. Life began probably in the primeval swamp. The current wisdom on the subject is somewhere around 4-point-something billion years ago, when certain chemicals came together, and all quite by chance and under the right circumstances, and voila, as Poirot would say, life began. A simple one-cell creature to begin with, like an amoeba. Or most likely, they say, something before that that they call RNA-based life. A kind of pre-one-cell, simple one-cell creature kind of life, proteins and things like that, that became the simple one-cell creature. But as I said last week, and I stand by it, there's no such thing as a simple one-cell creature. There isn't. Well, that's the idea, that life began, they say, 4-point-something billion years ago in the primeval swamp, that resulted in some one-cell creature like an amoeba that basically over a time frame of millions and millions of years gradually evolved into more complex multi-cell creatures that became, you know, creatures that lived in the oceans and became fish and eventually crawled out as amphibians and became various species, and finally, after 4-point-whatever billion years, us. So, if you want to trace your ancestry right back, you know, your great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great times a million, you know, grandfather was an amoeba. If that's what was true. And so here we are today, after all this time, allegedly, after all this time, and we live on this beautiful planet, surrounded by literally thousands of species of insects and reptile and bird and animal and fish and creatures as big as the blue whale, and creatures so small you would need a very powerful microscope even to see them. And as I said last week, you could take a spoonful of water out of a ditch, and if you look through a microscope, you would find millions of little creatures swimming about in a teaspoonful of ditch water. And so God is a God of infinite variety, and that's, we live in this planet where we're surrounded by all these creatures, beautiful in their own way. From, I don't know what your favourite bird is, mine's a toucan. I love a toucan. I mean, you know, who'd think of giving a bird a beak like that? That's fantastic. Or I like those macaws, you know, with the red and yellow and blue. They're just beautiful. And in England, it's a puffin. I love a puffin. I just love its face. And you can see, I mean, God, look, you know, and it's like he paints them just for pleasure. You know, why give a puffin a face like a clown? To make us smile. There's no other reason. You know, is there? I mean, they're just beautiful. Or a Bengal tiger. Do you ever see a beast so beautiful as a Bengal tiger? I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, don't put me in its cage. Well, if I'm standing outside, I'd love to see a Bengal tiger. They're absolutely beautiful creatures. And we live in this planet that's full of them. And yet, according to the evolutionist, all began in the primeval swamp 4 billion years ago, when the conditions, luckily, were just right. By the way, if you're one of those people who's got a little bit of a bump on your ear, if you go up your ear there to about there, you might just feel a little bit of a bump in your ear. I've got one. No, outside, just inside of your ear there, you've got a little bump. Okay, you know what that's called? That's called Darwin's tubercle, or Darwin's bump. That's what that's called. It's Darwin's bump. Not everybody's got one, but a lot of people have got one. Little bump on your ear. And it's called Darwin's tubercle, or Darwin's bump. And the reason it's called Darwin's bump is because Darwin believed that that is actually a kind of leftover from one of your predecessors in the evolutionary ladder. You know, you're descended from an animal with pointy ears, you see. An animal with pointy ears, and that's basically left over from when your ancestor had pointy ears. That's why it's called Darwin's tubercle, you see. The things that people believe, you know, I mean, it just blows your mind, doesn't it? Okay, so you've learned something tonight, haven't you? Hands up if you've got a Darwin's tubercle. I have. Well, there we are. Anyway, so it might be that, I mean, William was talking last week about when we're talking to people about these things. And it might be that, you know, you're talking with someone, and in conversation, somebody who believes in evolution, that person says, "You're wrong. When you say there's, you know, animals never change, you're wrong. And when you say that it's never been observed that animals change, you're wrong about that." For example, they might say, think about dogs. I mean, it's a known fact that different kinds of dogs are produced through, like, interbreeding. So, you know, and what happens is they breed out certain characteristics they don't want in a dog, and they breed in others. So, anybody know why sausage dogs are the shape they are? Anybody know why that is? Why they bred a dog that was short and long with little porky legs? So it could go down holes, right? To catch badgers, was it? Weasels or something? Badgers. So they bred them small so they could get down the hole to catch the badgers. And they bred them to be that shape. You see, if you go back to the ancestor of the every dog on planet Earth today, he didn't look like a dachshund. He didn't look like a sausage dog. Okay, it's been bred to become that shape, you see, that style of dog. So that now, you see, there are many, many different kinds of dogs that are recognised by the Kennel Club of Great Britain as pedigrees of a certain kind. And you've got everything ranging from the tiny teacup chihuahua, if you watch Crufts, right up to the giant Irish wolfhound or Burmese mountain dog or something like that. You've got everything in between. Even these are the Chinese or Japanese bald dogs that look hideous. You know, you've got everything in between that. And then there are literally hundreds or maybe even thousands of other dogs that aren't part of any particular recognised pedigree style dog, but they are crossbreeds of every shape and size from that big to that big, aren't they? In fact, sometimes I'm out walking my dog and somebody says, "What kind of dog is that?" You know, and I tell them what she's crossed between, what they are crossed between. So, you see, there's all these different kinds of dogs. And so somebody might say, "Oh, yeah, that's change." Yeah, but you see, they're all dogs. That's the point. They're still all dogs, whether it's that big or that big. That's the point. They are all members of the genus Canis. And every dog alive on planet Earth today, whatever size it is, whatever breed it is, whatever shape it is, all descended from a pair of dogs, one pair of dogs that came off the ark. And they were probably a wolf-like dog. And every other dog, whatever size it is, whatever shape it is, whatever pedigree, they all came from that pair, according to the Bible. You see, the word kind that's used here in Genesis chapter 1 refers to a species of animal or kite or bird or fish or insect capable of exchanging genes or interbreeding within certain defined boundaries. And these boundaries cannot be gone beyond. It's not possible for interbreeding to take place beyond these boundaries. Let me show you a picture I brought tonight and do a little quiz. Okay. What do you think that is?
A lion.
First glance, you might say it's a lion. But it's not, it's actually a tigon. It's a tigon. And a tigon, the father is a tiger, and the mother is a lioness. And there's actually another sort called a liger, where the father is a lion, and the mother is a tiger. So that is actually a tigon. So that's a cross between, yeah, a tiger and a lion. But the point is, tiger and a lion are both cats. It's not like a new species, it's not a new kind of animal, it's still a cat. Okay, here's another for you that I found. What do you think that is?
It's
a zebra and a donkey. Ivan's right, actually. It's called a zedonk. A zedonk. It's a cross between a zebra and a donkey. There's another picture here I found. Hang on. What's a zebra at the end of the day? It's a horse with pyjamas on, isn't it? That's what it is. See, they're all horses, or mules, or whatever you want to call them. So they're different, but they are within the kind. And interbreeding can only take place within the kind. Are you with me? When God created the various sea creatures and birds and animals and reptiles, each according to its kind, he created them with the ability to adapt to maybe the environment or to various other things. So they could adapt, and so that you could have variety within the kind, like we've already mentioned. There are numerous different sorts of dogs and different kinds of horses, and there's different kinds of cats. So God made them with the ability to adapt, and so there could be variety within the kind. But he did not create them with the ability to evolve beyond the kind, never to evolve into a new kind. So what do we see when we look around us today? We see, you know, hundreds of different types of dogs, and we see lots of different kinds of cats, and we see lots of different kinds of birds. But they're all dogs, and they're all cats, and they're all birds, whether you're talking about a polar bear, or a grizzly bear, or a brown bear, or a black bear, whatever. They're all birds. They're all different, but they're all birds. There's lots of different types of owls, but they're all owls. And none of them are naturally capable of interbreeding beyond their kind and producing some new kind of animal, as is suggested in the theory of evolution. In fact, that is the fundamental idea that underpins the whole theory of evolution. In fact, it's what the theory of evolution is all about, that one species can evolve into a new species, that can evolve into another species, and so on and so forth. Here's a famous picture that you will have all seen in some form or another. That one, you'll all have seen that, won't you?
Yeah.
Somewhere. That's a longer version of it, but I couldn't get a better picture of that off. And you see that all over the place. You see it in lots of different books, and you see it placarded, you know, everywhere these days, that picture. And I don't know if you've ever looked at it carefully, But there's something about this picture, and I wonder if you've ever noticed something glaringly obvious about that picture, that I wonder if you've ever noticed what it is, whenever you've seen it. No? I'll tell you, shall I? It's a drawing. It's a drawing. It's not a photograph. It is always a drawing, or else a model that somebody's made. That's what it is. It's a drawing. And the so-called missing links between the ape and the man, the so-called missing link, in fact there was another version of this, I couldn't somehow print it off, but there was another version that went from a fish to an amphibian to something else, to the monkey, to the... And the missing, but let's take it from here, the missing links between the monkey and the man, these, the whatever you want to call them, they're supposed to be like pre-human humanoids, Neanderthal man or Cro-Magnon man or whatever it names they do give to them, you know, the fact is that they are drawings. They are not because they've actually found. In fact, I think John Mackay talked about this last time he came, but there's one of those so-called missing links and all they found was a tooth. Mm-hmm. And built a whole creature on the basis of a tooth or a jawbone or something like that it was. You see, the drawings. And yet, nobody questions it. Virtually nobody questions that is actually how it is. And you know, it's the fact is there is nothing there in the fossil record to give us a Neanderthal man or whatever else it is. In fact, even those so-called pre-human humanoids, whatever they are, depicted as even the idea that primitive man was some kind of caveman who dragged his wife around by the ear and had a club in the other hand and bashed her over the head every time she spoke. That idea of primitive man is completely wrong, and it doesn't stand up to the archaeological evidence that is there. And we're going to look at this when we get to the chapters that deal with the period of time before the flood. The fact is, there are archaeological artifacts and things in existence in the world today that prove that so-called primitive man was not primitive at all. He had technologies that are beyond what we've got today. To this day, nobody knows how they did the Great Pyramid of Giza. Nobody knows how they moved those stones as big as they are. And more than that, how they actually cut them with the precision that they cut them. Nobody, we couldn't do that today. But ancient man did. So ancient man wasn't this kind of dumb caveman with a club in his hand. Not at all. That is the idea based on evolution. That we are getting better and better all the time. Actually, it's the other way around. Adam was a genius, taught by God. And when sin came in, that's when things started to go pear-shaped. You know, but even for the hundreds of years after Adam had been expelled from the garden, they had such knowledge and understanding, much of which we don't even have today. When Adam named the animals, the Hebrew word there actually expresses the idea that he understood what they were. He understood what they were for. He understood their place. In naming them, he understood the animal. We're still classifying them today as we find them. He knew, because he was taught by God. So it's gone the other way around. So, we ask the question then, why can a fish not become a frog? Because it's a different kind. Why can a frog not become a mammal? Or a chimpanzee? Why not? Because it's a different kind. And you cannot, it's not possible, to breed or reproduce beyond the kind. There can be variety within the kind, but you cannot reproduce beyond the kind. Okay, so why then can one kind not evolve into something else beyond its own kind? Why is it that while there can be variety within the kind through adaptation and interbreeding and so on, and for various other reasons, there can never be evolution beyond the kind? There is never any new species of animal or bird or fish or insect that suddenly develops. Well, why is that not possible? I could say the simple answer is because God himself set the boundaries of the kind, and that would be true. But actually now, we know scientifically why. And especially because of, as I said at the beginning of this talk, what has been discovered over the last even 2 decades. We know scientifically why. And there are observable scientific reasons why one kind cannot evolve or develop or create another kind. And it has to do, you see, with the genetic makeup and DNA coding of every kind of animal, every kind of creature, and even every kind of plant, actually, though their cells are different kind than those found in creatures. But it's to do with the genetic makeup, it's to do with the DNA of every creature. It's what's going on at the microscopic cellular level within the body of every single creature. What is actually happening constantly within your body, within every cell of your body, strands of DNA are being produced at an alarmingly fast rate. Constantly, they are being produced. And on that DNA is written a code that determines what every cell in your body is going to become and what it's going to do, as I understand it. And what the creature is actually going to be. It's all written into the code, you see. The DNA code is like a blueprint which determines what the thing is going to be, what the creature is going to be. All I can do this evening, because as I say, the technology kind of let me down again, is give you the names of these little films, and if you want to jot these down, or you want to bump them after, you can have a look at these on, otherwise we'll show them next week. And there were 4 particularly that I was going to show this evening, and I would have had to do a shorter talk because of the length of time, but if you've got your pen or whatever. The first one, if you put in stated clearly what is DNA and how does it work, if you put that in, you'll get this little film. It's like a cartoon, and it's for kids actually, that one. And it shows you in a very simple way. That's why I like it, because it's got to be simple for me. The second one, which is amazing, is called... that first one lasts 5 minutes, 5 minutes, 24 seconds. The second one lasts 6 minutes, and it's called Cell Structure and Function. That's amazing. Cell Structure and Function. Watch it, it's great. And then this next one will absolutely blow your mind apart. It really will. I mean, it just, I was like, huh? It's just amazing. This one's called Your Body's Molecular Machine. Watch it. And then the last one is almost like for entertainment. There's no talking on this last one. It is like a film put to music. And it's called Inside the Living Cell. And that lasts just for 4 minutes. You've got to watch these, and you've got to say to yourself, so could it have been evolution then?
Yeah.
Could it have been like accidental? Did that happen by accident? See, because like Charles Darwin, I mean, if you want to be sympathetic at all, and I don't, but if you did, you've got to say, so he's looking at this chimpanzee, and he's seeing it's got like hands, and then he's looking at his own hands and saying, it's kind of similar, And maybe he's looking at its face and thinking of some ugly woman, and thinking, maybe that's, So if you want to be sympathetic, maybe he was like deceived by the appearance of things. But if he knew what was going on in the cells, He would never have suggested that that could have just happened by chance. And as I said at the beginning, what amazes me is they know now. And when you've watched your body's molecular machine, Mom, you will be saying to yourself, how on earth, like, I mean, you know, accident? Come on, it's not feasible, is it? So that's it. You know, the fact is, God made each thing according to its kind. Things adapt. There are varieties within the kind. But they're all within the kind. And nothing evolves beyond it. It's never been seen to happen. It's not in the fossil record. And it can't happen. And what we know that goes on in the cells now, and the DNA, and the genetics of it all, we know for a fact that it doesn't happen, and it cannot happen. So, what it does then, is it tells us, we have got an amazing God, an amazing creator, who, we were thinking the other week, spoke his word, and the vastness of the universe came into existence in a day. And then, he who creates on the big scale is able to work on the tiny microscopic scale something equally wondrous. What a great God we've got. And there's no other way to explain it all. So there we are. So let's just have some prayer, shall we?